the great opportunity that the U.S. REITs have, and particularly those early winners that we're seeing raise capital now, they have the balance sheets and access to equity to be the buyers. And oftentimes, there'll be less buyers at that table. And that's where you oftentimes get the best returns. We know early part of new cycles is when oftentimes pricing is the most advantageous to the buyer.
Hello and welcome to The REIT Report. I'm your host, Sarah Borgson-Quito. Joining me today is Todd Voigt, Senior Portfolio Manager at Ranger Global Real Estate Advisors. Ranger Global is an independent investment advisor focused on the active management of global real estate securities portfolios. Todd is with me to discuss the key issues impacting real estate investing today and how REITs might find opportunity amid market volatility. Todd, thanks for joining me on the podcast.
Thank you, Sarah. It's a pleasure to be here with you today.
So, Todd, first of all, what would you say is your current outlook for real estate fundamentals in the U.S.? And would you say that price declines in the listed market are largely behind us at this point?
Thank you, Sarah, for that question. And talking about real estate fundamentals, first, we'll discuss the operating fundamentals. And our team at Ranger sees U.S. operating fundamentals generally pretty good. Now, within pretty good, there's definitely some sectors that are great and some sectors that are more challenged. So first, let's talk about what the sectors we see that are doing very well. That would be strong cash flow growth, strong occupancy growth, rent growth, et cetera. And we see that within the data center space in the United States. We see that in the manufactured housing space in the United States, the single family rental space, as well as neighborhood shopping centers. Again, very good in terms of operating fundamentals. On the good or maybe just okay side of things, these are sectors where there are secular long-term demand drivers, but maybe suffering from short-term either supply overhangs or short-term demand pause. And we're seeing that in the U.S. multifamily space. We're seeing that in the self-storage space. And we're seeing that in the logistics space. Again, sectors we like a lot long-term that short-term have some short-term headwinds. And then in the challenge space, we'd be characterizing that as in the office space for sure, and lower-end discretionary retail malls. Now, across this, all the U.S. REIT space, all REITs will have a headwind in terms of higher interest expense as REITs over time refinance their debt at higher interest rates. The good news is that's known. That's happened. We've had the interest rate move that has taken place in this last year and a half, and that's moved its way already into the earnings estimates across the street. And so that headwind is known. But when you talk about operating fundamentals, when we look at 2024, the average AFFO per share growth rate for the U.S. industry is 2 to 3%. And for 2025, it's actually accelerating to 5%. And that's inclusive of some sectors where there's negative earnings growth. So from a perspective of operating fundamentals and fundamentals in the U.S., we feel that they're definitely good. We're also at a point where values are still attractive. So 80%+ of the U.S. REIT space still trades at a discount to net asset value. The average discount is 10%. And this is after actually we've already seen cap rate expansion. And so that discount is not what against cap rates a year and a half ago, but the current cap rates today. Now, there's also 20% though that are at NAV or at premiums to NAV. And that can also be a positive in terms of the future, which we can discuss further. I think your next question on that was about price declines. And are the price declines done?
Yes.
To answer that question, I think it's best to look at the recent history. And so the U.S. REIT market's been in a bear market in all of 22 and most of 23, where U.S. REITs fell over 30%. So we've suffered a lot of pain. Now, something interesting happened in late October of 23, REITs rallied. And actually, REITs rallied in the U.S. over 20%, actually up 25%. So from a very technical definition of a bull market, where an index increases by 20% in value, technically, the U.S. REITs entered 24 in a technical bull market. Now, we're going through a gut check right now, right? So REITs are down 8.5% this year. Question mark is, was that a head fake or not? And we'll find out. One thing that we know is that earnings growth will still be positive. Valuations are cheap, so that provides support. But if it is a bull market, then it made sense for us to also look back and let's look at the prior history of bull markets in the REIT space. And there's been four bull markets in the last 30 plus years. And what's interesting is the average duration of the bull markets was 6.4 years. The average total return during those bull markets were 228%, which is a 22% CAGR. So if it is a new bull market, again, that's the if, We're about 6 months into it versus a historical average duration of 6.4 years, suggesting there's a lot of runway. There's also a history lesson in terms of the last major recovery and bull market we saw coming out of the GFC in 2009 to 2010. What we saw then is we saw the early winners, those REITs that were able to access equity to start the external growth engines, access that equity, and that proved to be a major catalyst for the broader equity market to rally. What we're seeing today is something maybe similar. So we've seen globally over $5 billion U.S. raised in primary equity. For these new winners, they're accessing equity at attractive valuations where they can invest accretively on an earnings per share basis and NAV per share basis. And that can be a signal potentially of a shifting in the advantage from private owners to the early winners that are the public owners today. But that is an indication of a potential dynamic we've seen in the past that we're starting to see today in the future.
Great. And how would you say listed real estate is positioned to respond to the uptick in commercial real estate backed debt volatility that we're seeing?
Well, I would say very well. The one thing that the U.S. REITs did fantastically well after the GFC and through the GFC is they completely repaired the balance sheets. So U.S. REIT balance sheets are in wonderful shape. So the average net debt to EBITDA for the U.S. REITs is between 5 to 6 times. And that includes some of the more heavily levered REITs. And so the quality REITs have even better leverage situations. And so from that perspective, the U.S. REITs are very well positioned for commercial real estate debt distress. And again, we're talking about also those 20% of REITs today that are at premiums to NAV, so they have access to the equity markets. But also, it's great to look back at the history as well. So we had during that GFC period, the global financial crisis period, from 2009 to 2011, we actually saw distressed real estate debt and REO, commercial real estate debt, balloon from very low levels to $200 billion. During that time, from 2009 to 2011, U.S. REITs were up 8%, which is counterintuitive to what you would have thought would have happened. And the one thing that is great about U.S. REITs is they're forward-looking. They were actually down 40% in 2008. So the U.S. REITs already saw what was happening. What was going to happen in 2009 to 2011, they recapitalized and they became seen as one of the primary buyers. So from that perspective, we see some similarities to today. So again, the last bear market we just went through reached down 30%. What we see now in terms of distressed commercial real estate debt at REO, now still sub $100 billion, but rising materially. And that's something that we see. Will it rhyme again based on what we saw in 2009 and 2010? Our sense is based on the balance sheets of the U.S. REITs, the fact that we have some of the early winners now at premiums to NAV that are raising equity, which we just, by the way, saw Rexford raise equity. We saw Torino raise equity. From that perspective, we think there are signals where the U.S. REITs are well positioned to withstand the difficulties that we see in the commercial real estate debt markets. And by the way, a lot of the private investors in real estate are very much levered to the financing market and the secured market. To the extent these winner REITs have access to the unsecured market, you're actually seeing with equity raising taking place and fundamentals improving, you're seeing credit spreads tighten. So you're seeing a cost of capital advantage on the debt side and equity side shifting from private to public.
Nareit's REITweek Investor Conference, the largest REIT-dedicated investor conference in the commercial real estate industry, is taking place June 4th to the 6th in New York City. You'll get a chance to hear individual company presentations directly from REIT management teams and opportunities to request one-on-one meetings with more than 100 REITs. Whether you're a seasoned investor or just dipping your toes into the world of REITs, REITweek offers a unique platform to gain insights, make connections, and stay ahead of market trends. Don't miss this opportunity to connect with REIT executives from all 14 sectors and discover investment opportunities. Register today for Nareit's REITweek Investor Conference by going to go.reit.com/REITweek RR to learn more. Todd, to what extent can listed REITs take advantage of some of the forced sale activity that might be emerging in the regional and community banking sector?
Well, I think they'll take advantage as those opportunities arise. And as banks are forced to sell or the keys are thrown back and they're forced to sell, they're looking for those that can buy. And the great opportunity that the U.S. REITs have, and particularly those early winners that we're seeing raise capital now, they have the balance sheets and access to equity to be the buyers. And oftentimes there'll be less buyers at that table. And that's where you oftentimes get the best returns. We know early part of new cycles, is when oftentimes pricing is the most advantageous to the buyer. And I see, and we see the U.S. REITs as in a position, and really the early winners in the U.S. REIT space as the winners in this potential acquisition opportunity set.
And we've already seen a fair amount of M&A activity in the REIT sector. How do you see this trend evolving for the rest of the year?
We think it's going to continue. I think Blackstone's most recent acquisition of Apartment Income, acquisition of Tricon, we think it's going to continue to take place. So recall, 80% of U.S. REITs still trade at discounts to NAV. There are great values still today in the public market versus the private. And so from that perspective, M&A can continue in terms of private taking out public names. But something we've seen in the United Kingdom is we've actually seen a large increase in public-to-public M&A. And that's something that we think could actually happen in the U.S. as well. Also, historically, this isn't exactly M&A, but it's also part of the capital markets and what can happen as the cost of capital shifts from private to public. During that 2009 to 2011 period, we saw 9 REIT IPOs. Again, often the trouble with real estate isn't necessarily the real estate itself, it's the capital structure. And the answer for a capital structure that is misaligned is new equity. And that's what REITs are. They are equity REITs. And those REITs that can access equity at attractive pricing, which again, we have that 20% of the universe that can, that's the opportunity where they'll be able to take advantage, but also the private companies needing to re-equitize their coming public via IPO. So that's something else we have our eyes on. And there are some U.S. IPOs coming likely in 24, maybe 25.
And are there any sectors that you think are going to be more active in terms of M&A or IPOs?
I think it's a function of differential across sectors in terms of where valuations are. If it's going to be a function of where maybe there's short-term headwinds in terms of operating cash flows, and there's going to be more focus on cost synergies, et cetera. But our sense is it's going to be pretty widespread. When we look across the multifamily space, we still see relatively high implied cap rates with a longer-term secular tailwind with short-term cyclical headwinds. And maybe that's an environment where you see more M&A in the U.S. multifamily space, where there might be a few years of more challenged operating cash flow, but long-term, very supportive cash flow growth potential.
And how do real estate fundamentals in the U.S. compare with the global markets? And how might investors take advantage of any disconnect there?
It's a great question. And we're global investors. We invest materially outside in the United States. And first, just a comparison, it's clear that the United States economy is far better than most other countries across the globe. Really only Japan, the top of my head, can really give the United States a run for their money in terms of strength of economy. And that's a positive for real estate fundamentals. But it's also potentially a headwind in terms of inflation being a bit more sticky in the U.S. than elsewhere, and maybe rates staying a bit higher in the U.S. longer than elsewhere. And so you're actually seeing in the expected market probabilities of when interest rates will be cut globally and by how much, very different in outside of the U.S. than in the U.S. in terms of probability is higher of cuts sooner in places like the EU or the UK or Canada. And so from that perspective, there is a potential capital market tailwind that might hit a bit earlier in the places outside of the U.S. But those economies don't have the same sort of economic growth that we're seeing in the United States. And so the real estate fundamentals there may be modestly less robust than you're seeing in the United States. In general, valuations are far more discounted globally than in the United States. But again, cheap across the board from perspective of discounts to NAV. One thing that's very different, though, is I think because of what we saw in Europe, UK with the war in Ukraine, is we've saw a material shunning or staying away from investing in Europe during COVID, during this last 3 to 4 years. Same thing with Hong Kong and China. With everything that's taken place there, you've seen a capital flight from there. And that's resulted in general, far less supply being built in these markets. So even though the economy is modestly less robust compared to the U.S. and in places like Europe, roughly at recession or no growth, the only upside is there's a far less of a supply response versus what we've seen in the United States. And from that perspective, that can be a positive in terms of operating fundamentals where you're not pushing through excess supply. Good example is when you think about European self-storage. and compare it to the United States self-storage, which is digesting excess supply. Total square footage per capita in Europe is running at 5 to at most 10% of what the US is at. So again, the place we are in terms of the real estate cycle and the investment cycle has materially lagged in Europe and UK and even parts of Asia compared to the United States. We see that as a positive in terms of competitive supply. Cycles are also not synchronized across the globe. And so we're in different phases macroeconomically and then also in terms of rates and real estate cycles. And for example, you think about China, Hong Kong suffering deflation. Think about Europe suffering recession or near recession. You think about Japan, where they've just exited zero interest rate policy to positive interest rate policy. So these cycles are different. The timing is different, and that creates the opportunity, which we believe the best way to take advantage of that is in a global investment where you can invest in the U.S., where we see fantastic opportunity, but also take advantage of the global opportunities that we're seeing out there. But again, to be clear, we are very optimistic about U.S. real estate as well as the global real estate space today.
Todd, so we've covered lots of interesting and relevant topics, but is there anything else that you'd like to touch on in terms of what you're watching and how it might impact real estate investing today?
One thing, having a focus on global markets, is we see a far earlier and greater push on the ESG side of things internationally versus the United States. And it's something that we think will be a big value driver for the next decade in the U.S. as well, as there's greater application of ESG across the United States. And a great example is when we think about what's taking place in the United Kingdom. And with IFRS accounting, you can see what valuers are valuing the real estate every 6 months as it comes through. And so from that perspective, what we're seeing is a differential and a far quicker cap rate expansion in the office space for what are deemed to be brown buildings versus green buildings. And we think that is something that's going to take place across the globe. So it's not only tenants that are making the choice to sign their next lease. They're going to be disproportionately looking to sign buildings that are ESG compliant, ESG friendly green buildings. You're also now seeing a cap rate differential starting to take place where those brown buildings are now seen as buildings where the tenant demand is far less robust and the CapEx backlog to bring those buildings to green is increasing ever more rapidly. So our view is something that we're very mindful and focusing on is those management teams that recognize this trend and they see it as something that is one right to do, but two is the right economic choice for them to do. That's something that we are looking forward to seeing. And we see leadership in the U.S. in the apartment space and single family rental with American Homes and logistics with Prologis and data centers with Equinix. So there are definitely leaders out there in ESG, but that's something that we're very mindful about the importance of going forward in the United States as well as across the globe.
Excellent, Todd. Thank you for your time. We've covered lots of great topics, so appreciate it.
Thank you, Sarah. This was a fantastic opportunity. I appreciate the time.
And to our listeners, if you enjoyed this episode of the REIT Report, please subscribe or leave a review on your favorite podcast platform.